I'm Gab. He's Jules Blue Skies over West London. Jules, great to have you back. Nice top as well, La Dea.
Of course.
And I believe that's a Cristiano Doni shirt.
Yeah.
Which makes it all the more special. Why not go and celebrate a doping Max fixture? Anyway, what a week. Champions League, it's back. We had the first legs. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into Real Madrid's win. Napoli coming away from the San Siro with 1-0 defeat. Inter beating Benfica. I was there.
Yeah. Honestly.
But there's one place to start, and that's the big clash. Manchester City against Bayern. It was interesting because it finishes 3-0. Say tie over. Although we've seen a couple 3-0s overturned in the past. You know, you can ask Roma about that. You can ask Liverpool about that. I think what's interesting here is that afterwards, Tuchel said the scoreline should have been much closer, and it didn't reflect. He said he was happy with the way they played, and Pep came out and gave it the whole, like, so hard to play against Bayern, they're so good, blah, blah, blah. Are they right, or are they playing to the crowd?
Yeah, no, I thought it was right when Pep said that at times Bayern were the better team. I thought that was the case, certainly for the first hour, first 55 minutes, let's say, because I thought they moved the ball well. Until Guardiola changed the way City pressed. I thought Bayern did well to find Musiala, for example, straight from the centre backs to beat the press. I thought they moved the ball well. They didn't create tons of chances, although Ruben Dias' block on the Musiala shot at 0-0 is huge, to be fair. Haaland has a big chance as well at 0 that he should have scored. But I thought the game was pretty even for most of it. In the end, it's three because there's one huge mistake by Upamecano. There's a wonder goal by Rodri that he can try again. I'm not sure he would ever score again. And then the third goal is when I think Bayern's head had gone already by then. So great for City, and they were very impressive in the second half, especially the way they pressed, changed the press from the 4-4-2 to the 4-2-4. And they were far more efficient on how to recover the ball, cutting the lines for Bayern. So well done, City, really. But yeah, I think if you're Bayern and Tuchel, you look at it and you say, okay, it was not a 3-0 defeat, really.
So those people who look at it and say, you know, I'm on the record, I can be both a big Tuchelista and also question what I consider to be the folly of getting rid of Nagelsmann in this way, saying they need Tuchel to save the season. What we've seen, obviously, out of the cup. In this game, this isn't on Tuchel. This isn't on Tuchel because, as you said, Rodri, you know, much respect to Rodri, weaker foot as well, but you know, you can try that another million times, it's not going to go in. And the other one is an individual error, and that can happen at any time, right?
Yeah. And if you saw I could see Tuchel's reaction, and he was just like, are you kidding me? What? We start well, because they started really, really well, Bayern. And then this happens now, when the plan was in place, when they kind of had control of the ball. I mean, how many teams go to the Etihad and have more possession than City, more passes completed than City? That just doesn't happen. And yeah, Bayern did it. And yeah, of course, they lost 3-0, so it's not a reflection. However, until that first goal and up to the first half, really, or even the Sané chance, straight after the second, at the start of the second half, to make it 1-1, Bayern are very much in the game.
You mentioned Leroy Sané there. I thought, you know, and again, it's narrative, right? But going back to his old team where he had, you know, I think it's fair to say more lows than high, in the sense that when he was good, he's unplayable. But that's kind of been Sané's career, right?
Sure,
up and down, up and down. He obviously wanted it a lot. And afterwards, you know, I think there's reports coming out, but I think reliable reports you know, unless he went and injured himself, of a physical bust up with Sadio Mane in the Bayern dressing room.
Yeah, apparently there were insults exchanged between the two. Mane didn't like the way that Sané was talking, and then punched him in the face, lip bleed or something like that. I don't know what will happen to Mane. There's reports in Germany saying that they might have actually terminated his contract. I don't know if that would be the case or not. But it's, I mean, I know you lost 3-0, and Mane was probably frustrated not to have started the game and not to have played a bigger role in a game coming back to England against a team that usually has done really well for Liverpool against. But like, this is, wow, this, you know, there's tension in the dressing room, and they're punching your teammates. That's
it's funny because, again, we have narratives. One of the narratives is Tuchel's return is going to, well, there's only so much you can do tactically, he's not going to have time to work, but he's going to bring unity, he's going to help them mentally, blah, blah, blah. And then you have something like this happen, which kind of says, you know what, there's only so much a coach can do.
True, but there were tensions under Nagelsmann before in that dressing
room. No, but I'm saying is it's not like bringing in Tuchel to fix everything, even that side of things.
Yeah, same in 2 weeks.
And I think this speaks to me, it speaks to something broader. And I'm sorry, this is on, to some degree, Brazo and the sporting director and Oliver Kahn. You put these people together, you need to have a presence in the dressing room that manages. If you had a presence, and this still happens, some of that responsibility is on you as a club.
What would you do if you were like a, you know, Bayern director or whatever? Could you really get rid of Sadio Mane for that? I mean, is you can easily say, like, you know, breach of contract in the terms of his attitude in the dressing room, we terminate your contract, I say you're a free player. Would you just fine him and he's back? You suspend him for a game or two and then he's back? What would you do?
I mean, you're asking lawyers a legal question. You know how much I like to talk about those. It may be grounds to cancel his contract. I generally don't know. I think certainly if I was an employment lawyer, I would, and I would fight it if I were mine. Have a very strong case. And then, but to me, it would be so stupid. It would be an incredibly stupid thing to do when you have spent a large amount of money to bring this guy in. You've given him a contract. It's not like he's 40 years old. You can still get some production out of it. He's had injuries. He's not been great this season. I would turn this around, you know, have a classic meeting and say, guys, you're on the same team. You want the same things. You, Leroy Sané, who has achieved, what, something close to nothing in your life, you're going to have respect for Sadio Mane, who's had success with his national team, who's had success with his club team, who's a Champions League winner. Mm. You know, you're going to respect Sadio Mane and not talk to him that way. You, Mane, as much as you'd like to, you're not going to go and punch this guy. maybe go back and
just a lot of punches lately, you know, like Valverde, Baena, even in the NBA, Gobert on Henderson. Like, I mean, what's going on? Punching each other.
I need channel. You try to do the classic thing where you channel this into a positive, right? These guys, they both want it so bad. That's what happened, and they were so disappointed because they were playing so well. I think a good club, and look, while I'm critical of Brazo in many, many ways, I think this should be his bread and butter. Because you go back to what he was like as a player or what he is now, he is a confrontational person. He will come out and he'll say outrageous things and people will react and there'll be a fight and then you come back stronger, right? That is kind of his style of leadership. So I think that's got to be down to him, I think, more than Tuchel. I mean, Tommy T has other qualities, but he's not somebody you necessarily want to sit on the couch with and, you know, and have a psychotherapy session. But I think you have to keep going. You've made a commitment to these two. You know, you're not going to shift Mane in the summer. And it's as simple as that. You put it down to a moment. But first thing you do, unfortunately, there's a million witnesses. You establish the facts.
Exactly. Who provoked who?
What was said? Who provoked who? There's enough players there. And you say to them, guys, we're not asking you to snitch on teammates. We're not asking you to rat anybody out. We want what's best for the team.
Yeah.
You know, but no, canceling Mane's contract, I think that would, unless there's something we don't know, that would be outrageous.
I agree.
I want to bring up another point, which is about Jamal Musiala. As you know, and I've gotten criticism from some Bayern fans for this, when I said, how do you combine Musiala and Thomas Müller into the team and post-Nagelsmann? Obviously, the first few games back, Musiala was supposedly coming off the injury, so he only played a little bit. At the weekend, they switched to a 4-1-4-1, no Goretzka. Okay, you can do that because you know Freiburg are going to go and pack the box and, you know, park the whole public transportation system in front of the goal. So you can have Musiala and Müller there alongside each other. Ultimately, though, you have to make a choice. And was it, I don't want to say brave, but of Tuchel. And Tuchel's pretty unemotional when it comes to this sort of thing, right? Müller's unhappiness with Nagelsmann may be part of the reason why Thomas Tuchel has this job. Mm-hmm. But now that he has the job, he's not going to necessarily cater to Thomas Müller. So if the base lineup, it's unthinkable to play 4-1-4-1 against City away. So the base lineup doesn't have Thomas Müller in it because either you play him at center forward or on the wing, and you've got other guys who play there, right? That all makes sense, yeah?
Yeah, I thought it made sense not to have him there. We would never know what would have happened if he'd started ahead of Gnabry as a false nine, for example, or as a nine, or instead of Musiala, for example, behind Gnabry. We would never know, but I just thought for what Tuchel wanted to do in the game, and again, to beat the City press, use Musiala as...
You have to use Musiala.
Exactly, to receive the ball from De Ligt and Upamecano, which they did well until City changed slightly what they were doing. It worked. Musiala is an incredible player, technically, much better than Thomas Müller. Thomas Müller, many other qualities that Musiala doesn't have for now, but technically, I thought it worked, even if, in the end, I felt a little bit like I wanted more from Musiala in the game. I thought Stones did a great job on him, to be honest. And I thought overall the City, the four centre-backs who were either back four or three and Stones a bit more stepping up in midfield, were outstanding 1v1 pretty much all of them through the whole game. It was really, really impressive. But you know what I liked? When De Ligt was on the floor for like an injury and he came back on, but Tuchel asked Müller, and Müller and Tuchel were talking, like, okay, if he's injured, what do we do? Who do you bring on? Stanisic? Do you move Pavard centre back? What do you do, kind of thing? So I think Müller would still be involved, but on the pitch, you have to say that if you have to pick between him and Musiala, I would go Musiala all the time, pretty much.
What about Müller as centre forward? Because I want to introduce... Oh, sorry, before I get to that, you mentioned John Stones. Barnsley, Busquets. Yeah, we're on board with that.
I mean, to an extent.
I mean, some mouthwash, please, before you mention Busquets and Stones.
And Barnsley.
At this stage, and Barnsley, all in the same... I don't want to go there. But, so we mentioned the Thomas Müller thing, and personally, I think Müller can have a role in this team as a centre forward. I understand why he went for Gnabry in this game. Because obviously he gives you the pace, and you don't know that you're going to have most of the possession, right? So obviously Gnabry's got a lot more verticality than Müller does. I get it, but it brings up the question of the center forward.
Yeah,
and Lewandowski leaves. Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting's done a fantastic job this season, but obviously he is what he is.
And he was injured for the game.
And obviously he was unavailable for this game. You feel that they should have put their resources into a viable centre forward.
Yeah, and Salihamidžić the other day said, in the summer we will sign a striker. So, I mean, Nagelsmann was happy for Lewandowski to go, and he wanted to go with his 4-2-2-2 formation where you maybe didn't really need a proper centre forward. I think very quickly he and everybody realised that you needed one anyway. So, okay, you had Choupo there and you did a great job, as you said, probably beyond expectations even.
Well beyond expectations.
On the goals he scored and how good he was in certain games. No problem. At this level, I think Choupo, like at the level of the quarterfinal against this City team, Choupo would have struggled as well had he been fit anyway. So I don't understand why now you're thinking, okay, this summer now we're going to go and sign a striker, and why didn't you do it last summer?
I mean, I would imagine the plan... was, and I don't think it was a bad map plan. You had Sadio Mane. Sadio Mane, a fit Sadio Mane from the start of the season. I know they played him there a few times. It didn't quite work out. Mm. But Mane is your center forward. You know, I think that would have been one of the options, maybe the most viable option, because he's the best goal scorer out of the group.
It's an option by default, right? Surely you can't plan the whole season hoping to win a treble with thinking, Mane could be a 35-goal-a-season striker. Because that's not going to happen.
Well, why is it not going to happen?
Because he can play there and do a good job. And we saw with Liverpool at times, him playing centrally, doing a good job. But this is not, one, it's not his best position. So you would take him away from his best position, which is clearly as a left winger.
But you have Leroy Sané. And you have Gnabry, and you have Kingsley Coman. So you've got three people who can play in wide position.
True, but his best position is still there.
Well, that's fine. But then unless you play one of those other guys up front, which you end up doing with Gnabry, you're still going to have that issue.
True, but that's what I mean. You can't guarantee you 35 goals as a centre forward.
Nobody guarantees you.
Some strikers do.
but I don't think, again, and this is where I may be in the minority here, but I don't think you need a 35-goal a season center forward. I think what matters is the amount of goals and the amount of chances your team creates as a whole. So if the team creates, it's not like, you know, if Haaland scores two goals, you get extra bonus points
City. They create loads. And I just don't think they... And we saw that again against Freiburg, for example. Yeah.
And they score loads. Against Freiburg, that was a good example where, you know, had Lewandowski still been there, they might have scored five against Freiburg at the weekend, right? So obviously, there's a difference there. But, you know, rather than going and spending money on a center forward last season who might have been sort of a plan B, you have four big name expensive wingers, plus you have Thomas Muller.
Yeah, no, I see.
I don't see this thing. The fact that they're going to buy one this summer
is because they realize their mistakes from last summer.
I think to some degree it's because they're also reacting to media and perception, and Matisse Tel hasn't turned into the next big thing. And
he's 17,
right? But remember, one of the reasons Nagelsmann went was supposedly didn't give Tel enough playing time, even though he made like 20 odd appearances. But whatever. No, I get that. But then you're stuck into the thing. Do I get a functional center forward? Or do I get an A-list center forward? And chuck money into that position?
Yeah.
And if I do that, do I have to sacrifice somebody, you know, to make it work out financially? Because remember, there's a lot of money going Nagelsmann's way.
Yeah, for sure.
And Tuchel's way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. This whole thing, I think we get a little too fixated on the center forward. I think it could have worked. I think, frankly, with Tuchel, it can work. And it'll be interesting to see how he does it. I like the Muller up front option, especially maybe not in big games, but against most teams.
Yeah.
You're going to have all the possession. I'd rather have the big experienced guy in the box wreaking havoc and creating space. For me, the single most important thing is Musiala's fit. Musiala can make the Ligt. This is the hub of your team. This is your spine. This is it going forward. And those guys have to always play. And other people adapt around them, as I see it. I want to bring up Bernardo Silva, because we were talking off air about his battle with Alphonso Davies. I'm fascinated by Bernardo, because in recent games, a bunch of games where, you know, I don't want to say he wasn't good, or he was slightly marginal to City in the recent run of success, relative to, you know, Riyad Mahrez was starting and a lot of playing time. Haaland was scoring. Grealish was on fire. And then, you know, it's a kind of like a come at the hour situation. He shows he can do the job wide. De Bruyne comes off and he does the job central. I mean, I'm kind of out of superlatives. This guy's really, really smart.
It's incredible. I think it's incredible. And I've got a soft spot because, obviously, I saw him in France and he arrived completely unknown from a Benfica B team kind of thing, and was amazing. And then I think had been quite a lot of time amazing with City too. In this game, you start him because he's a pressing machine, and you know, and it's not just the pressing, because he runs and runs and runs forever. I get that. There's a lot of players who can run who can't press. But he's so intelligent in the way he presses, so he could cut the angle of the pass from De Ligt to Kimmich or from De Ligt to Goretzka, for example, and then come and cover again Alphonso Davies if De Ligt has found Alphonso Davies on the side. And I just think when you have a player like that, and Pep said it after the game, he said, I've coached so many great players in, you know, Barcelona, in Munich, in Manchester, all of that, but he's one of, if not the most intelligent that I've ever coached, because I think he's like a sponge. You say something and he gets it and he does it straight away. And I can't believe that at some point they wanted to sell him. I really can't. I mean, I know they wanted to sell him because he wanted to go. I get that. But still, you could have said, listen, you might want to go, but we can't sell you. You're too good. But just before you go, at 18, someone retweeted a tweet that I tweeted 18 months ago after City destroyed United at Old Trafford 2-0 in the Premier League and won 2-0. And Bernardo that day, and I was at the game, played literally as a false 9, a false 8, a false 6, a false 10. It was incredible. It was an education to watch him and to see him play with that kind of football IQ and intelligence. And on Tuesday night, it was a very different role and position that he had, and pretty much just as one on that right wing. But it was, again, such a pleasure to watch him play like that and just being so good overall, without the ball, with the ball, when City had the ball, when Bayern had the ball. Just, it's an amazing player, really.
You know, we talk about sort of the ingredients that go into a footballer, and I've made this point before. He's obviously, he's a very, very technically gifted player as well. But and he's developed a lot of stamina.
Mm.
But what you said before about his movement and his pressing, that's up here. That's in his brain. That makes it more efficient. Because one thing Bernardo isn't, is he's not a phenomenal athlete.
No, definitely
If you were to go, and obviously these are all phenomenal athletes, like, oh, Gab, he's a better athlete than you are.
He can run, physically.
But if you were to go and rank City's athletes, I mean, he would probably beat Scott Carson in physical tests, I would assume, all around, right? But other than that...
Yeah, he's like, not Kyle Walker.
No, he's not any of these guys. He's not De Bruyne, even. De Bruyne has a level of acceleration which Bernardo Silva doesn't have.
True.
But he compressed so well because he has stamina and because he's efficient with his, you know, his timing of his movements. Yeah. It's, like you said, it's a pressing machine. It's
incredible.
You know, it's also, I think part of the reason we didn't see him as much during City's run in the Premier League is because teams know that City are going to press, and so they're not going to, you know, smaller Premier League teams are going to be more direct and maybe not play out from the back the way Bayern are, and so you don't need him. And so maybe at that point, Mahrez and Grealish out wide are a better fit, right?
Yeah, and to be fair, on Tuesday when I saw the lineup, I did wonder if Pep kept him fresh on purpose for this game, for Tuesday's game, saying like, listen, I don't want you to lose any energy playing against Southampton and all those dudes, just stay fresh and ready for Tuesday night. And then, you know.
I want to make a point about Alphonso Davies in this game, because I thought he really, really struggled. Now, obviously, he is an attacking, you know, he's a recycled winger, he's a wing back. When Bayern had their sort of back three and a half under Nagelsmann, I thought that was a way to make it work. I wonder a little bit, in a game like this, whether it's actually really difficult for him to make that adjustment.
Yeah, and the press. I really think that, maybe not so much at the beginning, but again, we go later on in the game when Pep twisted the way City were pressing. It was just too... Can you imagine when you're someone who just wants to go forward? This is the idea, is to go forward as soon as you have the ball, pretty much. And then every time this little Portuguese dude is in your face pretty much all the time, and you can't shake him because he's always there. And the only time really is on that Sané chance at the start of the second half where they beat the press and the City press was not just in place that then because so early in the second half. But apart from that, it must be really frustrating for Davies, but for anybody else, when City presses you so high, so well, Bernardo is there all the time. You can't, even if you try to dribble past him, then he comes back, or then you have, you know, Stones there or Akanji there, and
out of those situations, and it's not a knock on Davies, but you know, he can rely on running with the ball, but the minute you do that, you always get doubled up. There's always the other man coming, and Bernardo Silva comes back.
And then it's a 2-on-1. There's a couple of incidents in the first half where he could put a good cross in, and he managed to get a bit of ground, and then his end product was not good enough either. So it was a difficult night.
Final point, because otherwise we'll get in trouble. And Erling Haaland.
We have to.
Number 45.
45 in 39 games. There's another 15 to come, something like
Cristiano
that?
Cristiano and Messi got like 60 and like...
But he can get to 60. There's 15 games left. He can score another 15.
It's pretty remarkable what we're seeing. And I mean, like, we've talked about him.
Yeah.
We've talked about him endlessly. I think
the best is probably the cross for Bernardo. Of all his game, he misses that big chance. He scores an easy goal for him. But he's in the right position. Upamecano, again, nightmare night, loses him. Okay. But the cross for Bernardo, if that's exactly what he wanted to do, and I don't know, but it looked like he meant it, and that way, it's an incredible...
You think he might have mishit it?
I don't know. I was just surprised by the quality of the cross. Like, the cross is just perfect.
I like
difficult
the fact,
conditions with the rain and the wind and everything.
I like the fact that he saw the cross.
Yeah, me too.
Because
I was like, I
as a center forward, that's not going
to
be your first instinct, right?
No.
I would have thought, man, if you shoot or you don't have the angle, I thought you would have taken inside, waited for a runner, maybe played into pass of, because I think that there was another runner coming more centrally as well. You do something like that, right? You try to win a penalty. But instead, immediately his brain scans, sees, and he pulls it off.
Unbelievable. I think the whole Haaland family was there. I bumped into Maxwell and Rafaela Pimenta as well at the game. So clearly, it was a big night for the whole Haaland clan, and got an assist like that in a game like this. And you know, we said before, he scored 5 in 7 in Bayern, against Bayern before that. Never won, always lost with Dortmund. I mean, this time he scored, assisted, won. Pretty impressive.
Big time player. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Ismael Benacer's goal gives Milan a 1-0 win over Napoli in their first leg.
Whoa.
Jules, this is still very much in the balance, yes?
Very much, of course, even if obviously Napoli would be without Anguissa, without Kim, but Spalletti said that Osimhen would be 100% ready to go for the second leg. So Osimhen makes a huge difference. If that's the case, if that's true, I don't know, he might have been playing with us, but if it's true, then it makes a big difference. I thought Napoli were the better team for moments in that game. I thought the intensity was great in the game. It was an amazing game in an amazing atmosphere in a stadium that you know well, of course. That is, I hope we never see not being there again, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I think this one would be perfect for the second leg to watch.
I love the banner the Milan fans put up. Like, we're coming for you. It looked like Milan's symbol, of course, is the devil. And it's like, so it's like this devil.
It was
amazing,
man.
They're about to kind of strangle this character, Pulcinella, which is this sort of Neapolitan folk hero. I agree. I thought Napoli in the end maybe had, certainly had more clear-cut chances than Milan. Equally, the thing about Milan is they hit the crossbar with Simon Kjær. They had the Rafael Leao shot.
Yeah.
I do wonder a little bit. They were able to play with more intensity than they have. I think physically they're a little better. But I still feel like for Milan, you got to take the game to the opposition more than you're doing. I know it's hard. I know the stakes are high.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But it is encouraging. And
Magic Mike was special. And what about Brahim Diaz's turn on the goal?
Much love to Brahim Diaz, but
yeah,
you shout at Laboca and was it Mario Rui?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, between the two of you, put him down.
For sure. Yeah,
put him down for sure. No question. Magic Mike. I said before, like, is there a better goalkeeper in the world? Thibaut Courtois?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Not for the price.
You don't need many fingers to count the ones that are better than Magic Mike.
Not at that price. Yeah, and Gab, Napoli boss Luciano Spalletti had plenty to say after the game. He wasn't happy with the officiating and he was concerned about the home crowd back in Naples.
Yeah, so on the officiating, he was unhappy with Zambo Anguissa's.
It's not a second yellow. Come on.
He wasn't happy with that at all. Which, you know, whatever. At 11v11, you know, they still had those chances late on. The audience, of course, at the end.
Yeah.
But the story with the home crowd is interesting because this is such a weirdo story, and I think a lot of people have kind of missed this, and you've seen this in previous games. So there's a portion of Napoli's ultras who are very much at war with the club and the president, De Laurentiis. Yeah. They accuse him of ticket prices being too high, of putting in new rules, which means that if you bring in banners into the stadium and drums, you have to register them with the club first. And, you know, they want to be able to put up their own banners without having the club approve the banner beforehand. And so they protest. And so, which is part of the reason they were protesting when they lost 4-0 at home against Milan. It's about 700 people who not only do they not cheer, but they get angry and supposedly intimidated. And there were fist fights between them and other groups of supporters who actually were cheering for the team. And it seems crazy that Napoli, one of the most passionate football cities in all of Europe, when they play at home, they don't have proper home support.
But you don't think for a game like this, everybody will unite kind of thing? And
that's what Spalletti asked for after the game. I mean, I would think it would be the absolute peak of self-harm if they say, let's put our differences aside for this one game. And then, look, I think the Ultras bring a lot. I think it's a special part of the game. I can certainly see both parts of the argument. But you can't damage your teammates. Sure, but like you said, like, you saw what the crowd in Milan were like. The crowd in Naples should be the same way.
They need them badly.
But it wouldn't be. And so it's an issue.
Yeah.
Jules, I need you to help me sort this out. Jude Bellingham business. I mean, last 48 hours, it's been a vortex of clubs reportedly ruling themselves out of the race to sign him, starting with Manchester United and Liverpool. In the meantime, others speculating, oh, Real Madrid think they have him. Oh, Manchester City think they have him.
Yeah.
Because of the Haaland link. I didn't know Haaland and Jude were best buds.
They're best friends.
They go on holiday. I can't imagine Jude Bellingham being into the yoga and the tractor and all that stuff.
But you can still be best mate even if you don't have to share.
That's fine.
I just think that, for United, they've got so many positions to strengthen that you have to prioritize. You can't spend 120 million on Bellingham and still have to spend another 100 million or 120 on a striker that you need badly as well. So they would have to choose what position to strengthen first and where to put their money, because we know they don't have that much money either this summer. Same for Liverpool. And if you spend all your money on Bellingham like you did with Darwin Nunez and you don't strengthen in maybe other places that you should be strengthening, then that's why you say, like, I'm sorry, but Bellingham would love you, but we can't because we need,
I think Borussia Dortmund and Bellingham's people are playing an absolute blinder here. They have turned him into the player of the summer.
Which is going to be?
That's everybody's kind of forgotten that, hey, look, Kylian Mbappe is a year away from the end of his contract, and it's not clear if his owner is being investigated for rape and torture. Torture and kidnapping. And it has dominated. It has become the story.
Yeah, that would be the saga. But like it was with Haaland last summer. And I think right now, City, Real Madrid, and PSG are the three clubs who can afford him, who want to afford him. So, PSG. You would have
to speak. Somebody might have to leave for that to happen.
I don't think so. More Manchester United as well, Gab. There would be a third round of bidding for the club with the Qataris and Sir Jim Ratcliffe still very keen. But Gab, you'll be shocked to hear that Thomas Ziliakos, you know, that Finn businessman, is out.
Yeah, I'm absolutely shocked about the that the guy has ruled himself out of the bidding. Look,
why a third bid though? Why, like, why is it the second one? Do they want more money?
They want to see more money. Look, I said the Glazers do not need to sell. I don't know how many times I have to say this. These deadlines, it's all nonsense. And the Qataris know this, and Ratcliffe know this, and they're not going to come back with higher bid just because Rain tells them to. I think it's a war of attrition. They're waiting to see how things develop, what the Glazers as a family want to do. Not all the Glazer siblings are interested in football. They're going to see what kind of deal they can get from the other pathway, which is basically to borrow money, whether it's from Oaktree or Elliott or Aries, which is another option. I think the option of buying out the siblings is also there, if somebody will give them money to do it. So I think the story's going to rumble on, and people are going to get angry and angry at the Glazers. But you know what? Joel and Avram are used to it. People give them a hard time. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Real Madrid down Chelsea 2-0 with goals from Karim Benzema and Marco Asensio. Your thoughts?
Karim the dream! I mean, he loves playing against English clubs. He loves scoring against English clubs. Him and Vinicius again were outstanding. The best front two in Europe this season and last season as well, without a doubt. I was very disappointed by Lampard's tactics, by Chelsea overall. Real Madrid are a team that don't press that well. They're not renowned to be a pressing side, and yet Chelsea could not get out of the press. The first goal comes like that. I mean, the sending off by Chilwell, if you watch it again, the two lines are so flat from a Chelsea point of view, you wonder what kind of coach would coach a team like this? And again, and you know, I'm not happy with that.
Is it Lampard's fault that Cucurella decides to go and follow Benzema into midfield?
Well, Enzo should drop anyway in the hole. But Enzo, as we've said many times, is not a six by...
He's not a defensive midfielder.
Exactly. He has always played with 1-6 next to him.
Right.
And like, but Lampard made mistake with his tactics and his formation. The players were not up for it.
Let me pull you up on the formation. So
I would never play a back three against this front three of Real Madrid, put it that way, but go on.
You had the three defensive midfielders, or the three midfielders, right?
Yeah.
Kante, Enzo and Kovacic, right? That's not a mistake, but it does mean that you sacrifice wingers if you do that.
Yeah.
Away from home, I'm saying it's within the realm of possibility that you're going to play three midfielders, right?
Yeah.
For me, the issue where you're talking about more like Sterling and withdraw Felix and say, let's just nick something on the counter, because that's the message you're sending.
Yeah, but so just to start, that would sum it up. The back three is a mistake against that front three anyway. Vinicius on his own touched the ball 19 times in Real Madrid, in Chelsea's box. The whole Chelsea team, this is the whole, all every player in that team that came on or started, touched the ball 10 times in the Real Madrid box. This is just, it's just not good enough. And I saw after some translation of Lampard's press conferences when he said, like, oh, we didn't realize how good Real Madrid were, how good they are, you know, that they were that good.
Well, there are a million
I don't think
points.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, I would hope it's not.
I hope, because then that would be unacceptable. But I just thought they didn't approach that game well. That's all. That's all.
Did you have an issue with, because obviously, as you know, I'm a big fan of the best on earth.
Yeah.
I don't understand this freaking obsession with João Felix, because I kind of feel that if Mudryk, if Sterling, if Havertz, every time they got the ball, they did some sort of fancy trick, people would think that they're João Felix. I think he makes so many stupid decisions. The worst thing for me was, and I think this has kind of been overshadowed, you know, when he's through on goal and he's got Eden Militao chasing the balls there, right? He gets there first, right? One of the most basic things you're taught from a very young age is take the ball directly to the goal, run across the center back. If you do that, the center back will either foul you, in which case he gets sent off, or when you go through to the keeper, you've got both sides to aim at.
Yeah.
Instead, the Muppet takes it out wide of the goal, giving Militao time to recover and put him off his shot, and then it becomes a lot more difficult, and then he, you know, puts in that weak shot.
Yeah,
you're the techers guy. Why?
No, but
wouldn't you run across him?
So one, he doesn't have the pace. This is not a Sterling, for example, or even a
Bayern. He's in front of him.
But I think maybe he's surprised. I think he thinks I'm clear on goal now. I don't think he thinks that maybe Militao will catch him.
He's 25 years old. He's a professional footballer. He doesn't see Militao. He's not.
So because then I like what he did, in the sense that he dummied the shot, and then that buys him half a second to then has the shot that is not a good shot. He's on Courtois, because I thought Militao was going to block this. So at least there's that good thing about it. But yeah, you're right. I don't think he played that well at all.
I don't know. I'm shocked about how people are like, oh, Chelsea.
Do you think they can do it next week against this Real Madrid team?
I mean, you know, you say never, but I think it's very, very much, very, very much uphill. Final word, Carlo Ancelotti. At the end, you like your techers.
The first touch especially. The ball comes straight to him. He's on the touchline, standing up. Controls it with the inside of his rifle, and then a couple of hippies, and then passes the ball back with the laces. Oh my God! I could not have even more nice.
And he's 63 years old, exactly. And he's wearing a suit, and he used
and
to be a defensive
moving.
Midfielder.
He's so chilled. Oh
yeah, he's got a hand in his pocket.
Yeah,
and he's wearing dress shoes.
Incredible. The swag is incredible. Meanwhile, Gab, you were there as Inter beat Benfica 2-0 in Lisbon. I don't think many saw that coming, certainly not me.
So we knew that Benfica were on the slide and they only lost their second game of the season at home to Porto on Friday night. But equally, this is an Inter team that had not won a game in a month.
Yeah.
This is an Inter team where there's, you know, chaos, blah, 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 we can't score. I looked at the numbers. Inter, I think it was the last four games, Inter XG were like 8, and they only scored two goals.
Yeah.
To me, that says we can all go and roast Lukaku for his bad finishing and blah, blah, blah. But to me, that says you're creating chances. You're playing well. I thought they played this game really masterfully, took the sting out of Benfica completely in the first half. Barella coming up big and
That was the first on target, that goal, that first goal.
Right, but I think in terms of shots on target at that point, I think Benfica had one.
Yeah, yeah, the Gonzalo Ramos chance.
But the Bastoni cross is ridiculous. Amazing. And then he had another one like it later where the goalkeeper had to make an incredible save off of Dumfries, I think it was.
Yeah, Dumfries. Yeah.
Bastoni, 6'5", incredible. Running from the back, putting in those crosses on the fly. Incredible. It's just not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But no, they're really, really well placed. And I'm happy for Simone Inzaghi
because
he's one of the good guys. And I'm happy. I have a column coming up where I basically argue that, you know, this team with all the veteran free agents and, this team is a function of short-term thinking. Mm-hmm. This is a team that, if they don't find $400 million, Jang isn't going to own the club anymore, you know, in 13 months' time. However, so they're living in the moment. They're saying, no planning, nothing. Let's just make it work now. Let's enjoy the ride.
And the bros was doing bros things, you know.
And by the way, Benfica, Roger Schmidt, okay, you're 1-0 down. It is over two legs. There's no away goals rule. He takes off a defensive midfielder, Florentino Luis, and he puts on a winger like David Neres. Now, I have no issue with David Neres coming on because this is a team which is very, very little pace. But why would you take off? Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, it was weird.
You did that in a one-off game.
Yeah.
Strange. Christophe Galtier has been accused of disrespecting Muslim players during his time as manager of Nice.
Yeah.
Jules, what's the deal here?
I'll try to be clear and quick. We knew there were tensions last season at Nice around the Ramadan, that the Muslim players felt something was going on there. But that was it. We knew also that there had been tensions between Julien Fournier, who was the director of football at Nice last season, and Galtier, and Galtier's adoptive son, John Valovic, who is an agent, without a license, but is an agent. So we knew all of that. We knew the people were talking about emails. We knew that was there. But nobody talked about it much, reported it, or anything like that. On Tuesday, those emails came out. And Julien Fournier wrote to Dave Braceford and Ineos in these emails saying that he had a meeting with John Valovic and Christophe Galtier, where basically, to paraphrase it a little bit, but he says that Galtier said to him, there are too many black players in the Nice squad, there are too many Muslims, and basically for the following season in the transfer market, they would have to have less black players and less Muslim players.
Muslim players, once some observe Ramadan, some don't, some do it in different ways. As twisted as it is that, you know, you might have an issue with somebody practicing their religion, I suppose I can stretch my mind to imagine how it might impact the team fitness-wise, whatever. But what's the issue with black players? Not all black players are Muslim.
No, Galtier apparently said, you know, we in Nice here, I went to the restaurant last night and people said that we have a team full of black players, so that has to change, kind of thing.
The attitude of those people who say that is to change. That's what has to change.
Yeah.
If this is what Galtier said.
So now Galtier said he never said that, so he's word against Fournier's words. PSG are obviously looking at it very, very seriously because of who owns them.
Oh, 100%.
And I think if it was proven right, Galtier could be in big trouble. El Mundo in Spain have new revelations about referee Enriquez Negreira case, Gab.
Okay, so this doesn't have to do with... It involves Enriquez Negreira, who is a referee who had a consulting company that was consulting for Barcelona.
Yep.
And, of course, there's a criminal inquiry in Spain over the fact that he received $1.4 million over between 2018 and 2021, when he was also vice president of the Spanish Referees Association, which is pretty extraordinary in itself.
Yeah,
so they're investigating that. There is no, that they won't face any football punishment because of the statute of limitations. However, you know, they could face criminal charges. So El Mundo, which is a political newspaper. It's not a sporting newspaper. Clearly, they've had access to a whole bunch of leaks coming from Barcelona. So they revealed that in the past, and he's been working with Barcelona, I think, since 2002, including that period when Laporta was president from 2003 to 2010, when he was president the first time, that he's received a whole bunch of gifts. Such as a watch worth 3,000 euros and four tickets to the Barcelona Arsenal Cup final in Paris in 2006. You may remember that.
Yeah, Champions League.
That was the one where, was it Lehmann or Sol Campbell who got sent off in that final?
Yeah, Lehmann, and then Robert Pires was taken off.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's funny because I was there. I don't remember. I don't remember seeing Enriquez Negreira.
Me neither.
But it's just ugly. It's directed at Laporta. It raises things. It is true that, I mean, certainly if a referee asks you for, you know, and again, is Enriquez Negreira's consulting company. So it's not Enriquez Negreira personally, necessarily, although what would he have done with the 4 VIP tickets to Champions League final? It's just a really, really bad look.
Yeah.
Jean Laporta will address this case. He really, other than initially saying, well, everybody does this, everybody cozies up to referees, effectively reading between the lines. He's going to address this on Monday. There's a press conference, and he's apparently going to take questions on this. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Laporta, if you're serious about this, if you have any questions, given that, you know, the quote-unquote worst of it happened between 2018 and 2021, and Bartomeu was in charge, you come out and you reveal all the information you have. And if it means throwing Bartomeu further under the bus than he's already been.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, I mean, it's right, look at the presidents that Barcelona have had, Bartomeu, Sandro Rosell.
Yeah.
All these people are people whose, you know, reps are already in tatters. So if you do that for the good of the club, but you have to be 100% honest, I think, at this stage going forward, because more stuff will leak out. And this tells you, by the way, there's people inside Barcelona who are very happy for this information to come out as well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Erik ten Hag has revealed that Marcus Rashford's injury will keep him out for, quote, a few games.
Yeah.
Jules, that I presume that definitely includes the Europa League quarterfinal against Seville, the first leg at least, which takes place tonight, probably their game at the weekend as well.
Yeah.
I think they play Forest, and then possibly the other quarterfinal and the FA Cup semifinal in 10 days' time. I mean, a few days translates to 10 days' time in football speak, no?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, they don't play in the Premier League, of course, because of that semi-final of the FA Cup against Brighton. He might not be able to be ready for that. He might be able to come back for the following game against Spurs away in midweek after that weekend. You don't know. It's a groin injury. He's working hard with the physios. You just don't want to take any risk on one hand. On the other hand, this is the final sprint of the season. You need him now to win the FA Cup, to win the Europa League, to finish top four in the league, which is not guaranteed right now.
It's a very fine line. You could end up completely empty-handed, or, you know, you could win a treble and finish top four.
Yeah, exactly.
So up front, good thing your boy Anthony Martial is fit again.
And Ten Hag saying that statistically United are better with him. So I'm like, you know,
based on a sample size of two games, which is the number of games he's played.
Still, they're better with it.
Do you go with Martial up front?
Definitely. And then you do Sancho on
ahead of Weghorst, and then you go Sancho and
who? Yeah, come on. Prosecutors at the Italian FA have wrapped up their second investigation into Juve, Gab, this time around undeclared bonuses and payments to agents. Do we expect any charges soon?
I mean, given the amount of time that they've spent
on this, you assume that they're going to
come up with something. I think the type of charges, I mean, they've said that it goes under sort of this fair play perspective. You know, you didn't violate specific rules, but you violated the ethics clause, right? You violated the spirit of the rules. I think what they're going to ask for, I think they may wait until after April 19th to find out what the appeals tribunal says before they file the charges. Because if it gets thrown out, if the original charge, the one over the excess payments and the inflated transfer fees, if that gets thrown out, and it's thrown out on a technicality, they'll want to make sure there's no technicality this time around. Brendan Rodgers is still the bookmaker's favorite to be Tottenham's next manager, followed by Mauricio Pochettino, Julian Nagelsmann, and Graham Potter. But Jules, we've got two new names.
Yeah!
Burnley's Vincent Kompany and Feyenoord's Arne Slot. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, why is Rodgers the favorite? Baffles me.
He won the FA Cup with Leicester.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
He finished second in the league with Liverpool.
Yeah, that's why, yeah, that's why. I don't get it, why he would be the number one there. I like the other names. I like Poch, Nagelsmann, of course, we're fine. Graham Potter, if you want, because you think that it was not his fault if he's failed at Chelsea. But again, I think that's risky. Vincent Kompany, we were with him not that long ago. Great interview if you want to check it out. I love him. Love what he's doing at Burnley. I think he will be ready for Spurs straight away. And now on the slot, he's doing amazing again with Feyenoord like he did last season. So apart from Rodgers, which I've got an issue with, and Potter to a certain extent, for the others, I'm all in. They're different profiles, of course. So it depends what you want as a club, if you're Spurs, what you want if you're Daniel Levy, and what kind of squad you're going to have and you are ready to build for whoever comes in. But yeah, this is a good list.
Yeah, you're right. These are very different profiles, the different approaches. Personally, I feel like Nagelsmann is kind of like the moonshot for them. Yeah. And so, you know, they're keeping on hold the other people because they want to see
what he says, yeah.
If they can get Nagelsmann, yeah. How much it's going to cost them. Because let's face it, I mean, Potter unemployed, Rodgers unemployed. Pochettino has said every which way he wants to come back.
Yeah.
You know, Slot and Company slightly different, but I'd find it hard to believe that they would necessarily move ahead of Pochettino unless you have a reason for not wanting Pochettino.
Yeah, for sure. Back to Juventus. One of their leading sponsors says he would write to the club to put pressure on the players' behaviour after Romelu Lukaku was racially abused the other day in the game.
Yeah, so this is interesting. I think actually Juve handled, I wrote a comment, I think they handled this really as well as they could in terms of the action they took. They identified the fans who racially abused them. They took ownership. They said, yes, there was racial abuse there straight away. Not like, well, we're cooperating. We're not that sort of club. No, they said like, it happened. We heard it. These are the guys who did it. They're never setting foot inside our stadium ever again. So I think you would need to be commended for that. The reaction of some of the players.
Yeah, which we highlighted after the Danilo, we said.
Danilo and Cuadrado. Yeah. You know, and on top of that, they're kind of players of color as well, which you can read different ways. You know, they maybe didn't have the wherewithal to understand what was happening. They kind of walked it back. So this guy, this guy is the CEO of Allianz Insurance Company. Obviously, the stadium's named after them. They sponsor the bibs. They're a major, major Juventus sponsor. He recorded this internal video, which was sent around to Allianz employees, saying, I'm going to write to Juventus to seek assurances. I'll tell you what, the only reason you go and you put that on internal video, which you know is going to get leaked within 10 seconds, is if you want Juve to know this. And if you want Juve to know this and you're their sponsor and you've signed a contract with them, I'm going to suggest that he did this with Juve's permission.
Yeah.
In other words, said, hey guys, I'm concerned about this. It makes us look bad. Juve said, yes, that's why we take this so seriously. It makes us look bad at hurting the brand. What if I do this? And Juve say, like, great, go ahead. We want all the support that we can get to go and stamp out this kind of behavior. So if that's what happened, well done to them. And again, well done to Juve. So far on this issue, I think they've done everything right. Mm. The UK and Ireland joint Euro 2028 bid has been submitted. They're up against Turkey.
Yeah.
Jules, it includes 10 stadiums, two of them in Liverpool and Belfast, haven't even been built yet. But the biggest club stadium in England has not been included.
No.
Old Trafford.
No Old Trafford, which is a shame because you get fundings when you host, when your stadium is picked to host a big tournament and you can refurbish a new stadium, which Old Trafford badly needs, of course, as we know. But yeah, no Old Trafford, but the Etihad is in, for example. No Anfield either. I don't think the Emirates is on either.
No, it's not.
It's not either. So yeah, they seem quite positive and optimistic that they will get that over the line and that they will host that the Euros after the one that we have in Germany in the following summer in 2024. So yeah, let's see.
But leaving out Old Trafford, I don't know. Like, if I'm assuming City of Manchester doesn't need public money, and if they did, the Abu Dhabi would just pay for it anyway. So maybe that, and then they don't want to be seen to be giving the Glazers money to refurbish Old Trafford.
You would think so, but
maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Strange.
But it seems, given Old Trafford's history and everything and what it means, I'm a bit surprised.
Yeah, Italy also bidding for Euros, Gav, and also against Turkey, but this time for 2032. So what, Turkey have already put two
back to back.
Back to back. Wow, okay. It'd be 42 years since your last hosted a big tournament, of course, the World Cup in 1990.
Which is why we have these wonderfully vintage stadiums.
So you need the funding to refurbish all the stadiums.
Well, it was funny because Italy bid for 2012 when it went against Poland and Ukraine, and it was one of the worst bids in the world. They were so sure they were going to get it. No, seriously, like the arrogance of the people running at the time. They said, oh, well, look, it's surely not going to be Poland and Ukraine. You know, and then, of course, it was. Yeah. They lost that bid. And so that had this knock-on effect where nobody spent money to refurbish stadiums because they said, oh, we'll get 2012, and then, you know, the government will pay for all of them. I hope that knowing they get in 2032 doesn't mean that other plans are going to be put on hold. So, for example, Milan, one of the cities, they said it may be the new San Siro or the new stadium that gets built somewhere.
Yeah. Right?
Or maybe one of the two new ones if they keep pretending like they're going to build a new stadium too. But no, it's good. It's long overdue. 42 years. Come on. We won 4 World Cups. Let us have it.
Yeah.
The England women's team streak is over as they lose to Australia. Jules?
Yeah, on Tuesday night, they lost 31 games. I think they weren't beaten. To be fair, I thought against Brazil in the finalissima the week before, they were second best. I thought Brazil, especially in the second half, were amazing and should have won the game instead of
the late equalizer and then went to penalties.
Yeah, it went to pens. So I think it was coming a little bit, and Australia played well. And maybe it's not a bad thing so close to the World Cup that this is like a warning sign. And I think Serena Wiegmann said. Similar thing after the game. This is like, you know,
do not rest on your laurels.
Exactly. For example, the Premier League will stage 16 preseason tournaments in the US this summer, Gav.
Money spinning tours rather than letting the clubs organize their own games and take all the money. Let's do it with the league branding. It's a mix of clubs because you've got, I was going to say, like, do we still count Chelsea as a big club?
Yeah, come on.
I'm going to go in order of how big I think their fan base is in the US. I'll go Chelsea, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Fulham, Brighton, and Brentford. I don't know how many American fans Brentford has.
How many American owners, by the way?
Villa, Fulham, Chelsea, and Fulham.
Yeah,
they're going to play a bunch of games. I think it's the tweet is an experiment. They're not playing in gigantic stadiums. So, for example, their games in New York are at the Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, it's all on the East Coast, isn't it?
It's all on the East Coast. I think this suits the clubs, and you know, let's see how it goes. The Jean-Kevin Augustin deal will go down as one of the worst in the history of Leeds United. They lost one legal case, had to pay Leipzig 18 million euros, and now FIFA's dispute resolution chamber says they need to pay the player himself 27 million euros. I have no idea how they calculated that number.
I'll tell you how.
Jules, remind us what this is all about.
Yeah, so it's the 1920 season where Jean-Kevin Augustin, who used to be this wonder kid when he was younger at PSG, kind of lost his way, but he's under contract at Leipzig, RB Leipzig at the time. They loan him in January 2020 to Leeds, who are in the championship at the time with Bielsa. They loan him with an obligation to buy. Not an option to buy, an obligation to buy for 18, I think at the time it was 21
it was
or 20 million euros.
Yeah, it was 20 million euros.
But not just an obligation to buy in case they get promoted. That's the way. So if you get promoted to the Premier League,
you
there's an obligation.
You have to buy much.
For 20 million. And also, in the contract, is written that if they go up, they have to give Augustin a 5-year deal worth 90K a week. Okay, they sign it, they agree to it. They get promoted, albeit with the season finishes later because of the pandemic, with all of that.
And Leeds say, look, the contract says June 30th.
Yeah.
But the season only actually ended in
July
12th
or
whatever, right?
Yeah, it was whatever it was.
Therefore, we don't have to pay you.
Yeah.
And Augustin only played 48 minutes for us. We don't need you.
Exactly. So they basically let him free and say, we're not going to give you a new deal. We're not buying you to Leipzig. Leipzig complained, Augustin complains, he now plays for Basel. And they will have to pay, so they've already paid, as you said, the transfer fee, now they will have to pay.
So the transfer fee, so they went to, so Leipzig rightly went to FIFA.
Of course.
FIFA said, you guys are stupid, what are you guys? You guys need to pay this. Leeds, lawyers again, I'm really sorry, right? Find some moron lawyer who says, oh yeah, let's keep fighting this. Yeah, pay me more money by the hour. Honestly, like, you know, SCUN. They lose at FIFA, as they should. Yeah. They lose again. They appeal to Court of Arbitration for Sport. More lawyers, more fees. More they money. Lose again.
So it actually cost them far more than the 18 and the 27.
In legal fees. No, and now Augustin's come forward. I mean,
of course.
I presume they'll appeal this again and they'll go to CAS. It's 27 million seems like a ton of money, to be fair.
5-year deal on 90K a week. Why did you commit to that in the first place anyway? Why did you put it on paper? Why all those reasons?
Honestly, this is a dumb deal, and it's we can crazy. Criticize Leeds for it. I would like to know the names of the lawyers who advised them to do this. No, seriously. No, honestly.
More FIFA. Tottenham sporting director Fabio Paratici has launched an appeal with FIFA against his worldwide ban.
Yeah, I think it's fine that he's going to do it. I mean, I think it's what's going to be determined is if the Italian FA bans him or not. You know, wait another week.
Yeah.
And then see if your ban is upheld. Unless he thinks he might get more bans later on. But yeah, I don't think FIFA are going to be the ones who ultimately are going to determine this. Not. Leicester City have appointed Dean Smith as their new manager. Jules, does this make you more confident that he'll keep them up?
Absolutely not. Not at all. That's what I have to say on this. I don't understand this choice at all. Borussia Dortmund have extended Julian Brandt's deal through 2026. Does that make sense to you, Gab?
I think it does. I'm not a big Julian Brandt guy, but I think he's been much better really this good, season. Yeah. He's contributing, and he's an important part of the team. Ryan Cherki is apparently eligible to play for Italy.
I can't believe you put this story.
We had
here.
This conversation. He's 16 years old. He makes his debut, and you're like, he's better than Camavinga. And so I'm waiting for him to get excited. Then I get even more excited. I find out his dad is from Puglia, and Cherki's actually, I think, his mom's last name.
Yeah, that's right.
He's also eligible for France and Algeria. Do I need to get on the phone to Mancini and say, give
Absolutely
this guy a call?
Not. Leave him alone. Leave our players alone, please. This is
you
not,
don't need him.
It's not Retegui or, you know, like an Argentine
guy. Why hasn't
he
been capped yet?
Don't worry. He's a key player for our under-21. He's a wonderful player, wonder kid. He will one day play for France and probably win the World Cup with us.
It's still blue.
Competition that you don't even play in. So it's fine. Richarlison hasn't had a great season, Gav, as we often say, and still hasn't scored yet in the Premier League. And now his neighbours have lodged a complaint with the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals over his dogs. What?
Yeah, this is such an odd story. Look, I'm a big animal lover. They're not suggesting that he's cruel to his dogs. This isn't like
they bark all the time, right, or something like that.
Is that they make too much noise and so he needs to discipline his dogs? I don't know. Apparently, it's his 75-year-old neighbor. Look, I'm all for. You know, animal welfare should come first.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can judge if a dog is... I don't know enough about dogs. If the dog barks, does it mean he's unhappy? Does it mean he's happy? Does it mean he's a feisty dog?
I don't know.
One of them is this very cool-looking white husky, by the way.
Maybe Richard is so intense all the time that maybe the dogs kind of like react to it. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, they say like, you know, the owner starts looking like the dog reflecting the personality and vice versa. I genuinely don't know. I just obviously hope the dogs are well taken care of.
Yeah, for sure.
Roland Virkus, who is the director of Borussia Mönchengladbach, has confirmed what many of us kind of already knew.
Yeah.
Marcus Thuram, Ben Sabani won't be back, which we knew.
Yeah.
Neither will Marcus Thuram.
No. Thank you for this. Because, yeah, we all knew it. He's out of contract in June. And one, they haven't really offered him anything. And two, he said to them quite early on that he was not going to renew anyway. That he wanted to move.
Well, Bayern need a center forward. And they love taking players from other Bundesliga clubs.
He'd probably be on the list. Maybe not the short list, but on the list somewhere. I think he'd be on the list on other players at 25 years old.
I have a question marketing-wise. Given it seems that there's a bazillion wingers in football and not many center forwards.
Yeah.
So Thuram just pretend he's a center forward?
I mean, he's played there more.
No, I know. Like, say, like, oh, look, so, this is what I am.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. But with the national team, I think he would mind you. Yeah, he can be. Yeah. You know, you're right. It's not a bad idea. I mentioned that to Lilian.
And also mention Arsenal to him as well, because
I would love him, Arsenal.
I know you're waiting for Flo to come back and whatever.
I would love him. And you know what?
It's such
I would
an
love
obvious
him.
Fit.
I would take Kefren as well. I would take the whole Thuram family in my house if they want. I welcome them all. It's great.
What job would Lillian do?
He can just, you know, like come and do the Gab and Jules meets to start with.
Exactly.
You know, and then we figure out. And staying with Arsenal, Gab. Some were very impressed by a piece of skill from Gabriel Jesus at the weekend against Liverpool on Sunday, including the Premier League, who put the video out on social media. And there's kind of it's a sombrero, and then where the ball goes over the head of Thiago Alcantara, and then some sort of no-look pass, some people say. But you've got an issue with that.
I had a major issue with this, because I think language matters. And I'm sorry, like, A no-look pass is a no-look pass. I think actually what he did was more difficult than a no-look pass because he's got Thiago Alcantara up his backside. He totally fools him, controls the ball, and then he goes and he flicks the ball away in a pass. But and then he turns his head. He turns his head after he makes the pass. Yeah. And I think actually he doesn't turn his head to pretend like he made a no-look pass. He turns his head because he's annoyed with Thiago Alcantara. Maybe he felt he was fouled or whatever, or felt he had something to say with him. I think that's actually why he turns his head. This is not a no-look pass. A no-look pass is defined. Anybody who follows basketball, like you do, knows what a no-look pass is. When you look one way, and while you're looking one way, to deceive the opposition, you pass in the opposite direction. That is called a no-look pass. Ronaldinho did it a lot. Mesut Ozil did
Firmino.
It a lot. Andrea Pirlo famously did one in a World Cup semifinal. These are no-look passes.
It's still a piece of skill, though.
Tremendous piece of skill, so don't cheapen it by calling it something it's not. This is what bugs me. I would love for whatever bot put that out on the Premier League fan account. Whoever called it a no-look pass, I would love them. Give me a call. Let me educate you on what a no-look pass is. Learn some history.
Listening.
You know what? There's many great examples of, I said, Mesut Ozil should do this all the freaking time. Yeah. That's a no-look pass. This, fantastic piece of skill. Something, I gotta say, I'm not sure Gabriel Jesus had in his locker. All praise for him.
Yeah.
But not a no-look pass. Going back to the Milan-Napoli game, Rafael Leao kicked out and broke the corner flag at one point. It just shattered in bits up in the air. Yeah. Jules, what surprised you more? That he wasn't booked, or that UEFA, despite all the TV revenue, uses such cheap, off-brand, crappy corner flags?
Certainly the quality of the corner flags. More seriously, I thought it was a yellow card when you did that, so I don't understand why.
I think you have discretion, because they didn't quite do it in anger. It's not like it was a super violent kick.
No, I know.
Which is what surprised me. It just shatters into a million bits.
Why is that what they're using? Like, I mean, unless it's recycling kind of like plastic or
maybe
whatever.
It's based on that plastic in the sea.
I'm all for that. But if it's not, then sort yourself out, UEFA. This is not quality. This is not the quality that we are used to. Mark Ogden and others are reporting that Rudy Garcia is on the verge of losing his job at Al Nassr, and some are even speculating that Cristiano Ronaldo's new boss could be a countryman of his, Juan Jose Mourinho. Gab, what do you make of this one?
Okay, so let's leave the Mourinho. Mourinho has a day job. He has a contract.
Another year.
He's got a Europa League to win. Yes. He's got a top four finish to get with Roma. He's got a new contract to sign with Roma. All these things. I supposedly this is down to the fact that Al Nassr are still second in the table, and so Rudy Garcia has one game to save his job. I don't know. I would assume Cristiano might have some say in the matter as well. I don't see why Cristiano wouldn't like Rudy Garcia. I think it's simple as. And these one-game ultimatums, they rarely work. They rarely work.
They always
do. Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday.
Oh, yes.
It's a full weekend of action. Oh. There needs to be decided. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.